is episode 14 of Go Mountain Goats. I'm Finley Wild. I am back. Unfortunately, I have just broken my wrist, which is a bit of a downer for the summer. Doing a very sensible activity known as falling off a skateboard. So yeah, that's pretty rubbish. But keeping a positive attitude and on the turbo trainer and doing some weights and core and things. So hopefully we'll be back in the hills, back running pretty soon. But I have taken a serendipitous option of noticing someone was up to a lot in Scotland, up around my way, up from the lakes, and I thought, huh, I wonder if he's around. I'd like to talk to him. So yeah, I've got in my, it's also my first interview since we're allowed people in the house, which was really nice. So we're in my conservatory. And yeah, I've got Josh Jardine.
Hello.
Hi. Yeah. Thanks very much for coming along.
Oh, it's been a pleasure.
And yeah, we've actually been sitting around having a cup of tea, talking about all the stuff you've been up to.
Yeah, I've been having a great time in the rain.
Yeah.
Avoiding the midges.
How long have you been up in Scotland?
Only the last couple of weeks. Took kind of a couple of weeks off work to try and come up to the northwest, climb as much as I can. Hasn't really worked because it's been raining in the northwest and it's been raining all over Scotland. So I've been sort of ticking off some classic rock routes.
Okay.
In the Cairngorms, just having some good days out. Really, it's been quite good exploring some Scottish rock rather than running around Scotland.
Yeah. A bit of biking as well, and rest days.
A bit of biking. We set off. We did a Cairngorm bikepacking loop with some of our friends. To start off the trip, which was really good. It was a really good kind of inner lap of the Cairngorms, quite a good little introduction to the Cairngorms, really. And stopped at Bob Scott's Buffy, which is really, really nice. Loads of food there.
So really?
It made it quite nice because I'd gone quite light and hadn't taken much. So it was quite nice to find somebody had left some lovely food. But yeah, a really nice way to start off the trip and get to know the area a bit before heading up to the crags and stuff.
Nice. I suppose we better start off and ask you who you are. Who is Josh Jardine?
Oh. I've done a bit of running, a little bit of climbing on top of that, from the Lake District.
Yeah.
Live around the Kendal area, sort of got into fell running when I was about 17, 18, a bit of a background of road cycling,
okay,
which I did when I was a teenager in Spain. I grew up and came back to the UK, did a few races, didn't really enjoy the scene. It was quite elitist, it wasn't much crack. So my dad's friend was doing this thing called the Bob Graham, so I sort of tagged along for a few runs, ended up running it with him. Whole thing then.
Oh, this was your intro into
that was
into
my
running.
Intro to running, really. I think I did one fell race leading up to it, where I set off way too fast and blew up, and that describes my running style quite well, actually, setting off too fast and blowing up. But yeah, that's how I got into fell running. Sort of raced all over a bit and couple of few years of the champs races.
Okay.
Never done too well because I always blow up on at least one of the races. But also do a bit of climbing as well because my dad's used to be a good climber, so I was brought up at the bottom of a crag, so it's sort of something else I do on top of the running as well, and enjoying mixing it up at the moment quite a bit.
Yeah, yeah,
good,
it sounds
good
like
fun.
It. From all the missions you've been on the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, it's been great, just making the most of having the time.
Did you climb before you were a runner then?
Yeah. I've climbed all my life, really. I was brought up at the bottom of crags with my dad. I was never really had much good ability with climbing. My brother was always way better than I was.
Okay.
I think I lack the three principles of being flexible, having good technique and having good core strength. I lack all three of them, so doesn't make me a very good or pretty climber, but I just enjoy getting out and getting out and doing routes and getting to good places that climbing takes you, really. And it's quite nice to mix it up with running as well and cover the ground and terrain and get up some crags as well at the same time. It's all
because we were talking before we started recording about how that's really fun, like mixing the two, and like you can take, you know, certainly I've found, you know, you can take something from the climbing and then add the running into it, and sort of like you've just been up Tower Ridge today, haven't you?
There's so much things you can combine with the running and climbing. It's mixing it up and sort of mashing the two sports together. As long as you keep the climbing at sort of an easy-ish level, it can make some, enhance your day out and make it so much a richer, more experience.
I don't know why, I was thinking about the way it just allows you to do more. I don't know why the sort of allure of the link up is there, like, but I definitely feel that of like, it's just fun to go and link different things up. I mean, do you find that?
Yeah, definitely. It's quite like looking at a map and thinking, oh, you could do that here and run between it and do something else somewhere else or make a loop out of it. It just does make it a lot more alluring and more exciting than just going for a normal run, I suppose. Not that running's boring, but it just adds a bit else to it.
Why do you think it is?
I suppose it's the challenge of using more skills to do it. I think it's quite appealing, putting yourself, I wouldn't say out of your comfort zone, because when you're trying to link running and climbing, you're sort of doing something well within your limit, but it's making it a bit more extreme, I suppose, in a way.
Challenging you.
It's a bit more challenging than to say you could just walk to a crag and climb a route, but why not try and link a couple up and make them over there? But
yeah. And I probably didn't say at the start, but I think we're going to move on to talk about the Lakes Classic Rock Round at some point. Which obviously is a synthesis of both the climbing and the running.
Definitely, it's a cracking day out anyways. Just quite an appealing challenge, really. Sort of heard about it from like when it was first done, I think a couple of like hard old school climbers, I think it was Nick Wharton, and I think I can't remember if it was Brian Davidson as well, first did it quite early on. That was in the
what is it we should say for anyone who
so there's a book called Classic Rock written by Ken Wilson. It's sort of like the Bible of the best kind of easy-ish climbing routes in the UK. I think there's about 40, and it covers all of the UK's best climbing from Scotland down to the Lake District, Peak District, stuff on the south, kind of south coast, southwest coast, and Lundy. And there's about, I think there's 14 of these routes are based in the Lake District. So the idea was to do them all in a day and run between them.
Okay.
So it's not really a round, it's a point to point. You could do it as a round, but it would add quite a bit more running. But I think the original guys that first did it sort of started at Dow Crag and did all work the way through the Lake District and finished in Borrowdale and Little Chamonix. It's really good because it's quite varied climbing. There's different styles in these routes, some really classic traditional routes. So Little Chamonix, probably the most famous climb in the Lake District, but you're also doing Mosskill Grooves on Scarfell and Jones Route, Nape's Needle. It's just adding all like the classic routes that people try and tick off, just to do them all in a day and run between them unsupported. And so that was the kind of idea that the guys that originally did it came up with the idea of doing this and running between them. And there wasn't really many repeats in the few years leading after it. I think there's only been about 10, 12, 13, 14 people have done it so far. And I suppose it's quite niche, being able to do the running and climbing as well. So I suppose that's sort of why not that many people have done it, but it's such an incredible day out.
How I don't know the lakes sort of climbing that well. Like, How well a job does it do of sort of linking up like the best climbing in the lakes?
It works really well because I suppose relatively the lakes isn't actually a massive area. It's
sure.
all yeah. quite compact in sort of not a massive area, so it works really well being able to link up the crags. I suppose it's shown when James McCaffrey did his 100 extremes and ran between them. It's almost perfect for, I suppose, Wales is as well in a way. And it's such a rich kind of rock types in the Lake District. I think it's the only place where you could climb on sandstone, then granite, then rhyolite and slate all in a day if you really wanted okay. to. So it sort of lends itself to it really nicely. And being a fell runner already, we looked sort of the way we looked at it, we linked a lot of the race routes into these kind of rock routes.
Right.
So we sort of used bits of the races. So like from the top of Bow Fell, we traversed around Espike on reverse in the Langdale Fell race route.
Okay.
Then ran Borrowdale from Espike all the way to Scarfell Pike and dropped down. So it was really nice link up of all kind of fun things that we do in the lakes, really.
Yeah, you're using your knowledge and your roots from running
yes.
to then, you're like, all right, well, this is the way we get between those two crags
yeah,
the fastest.
That's what lent it so well to it, because we knew all the, we sort of know the fells like the back yeah. of the hands over there. Well, we did get lost coming down to Freeshires, but yeah, it's nice to know the area and know the little trods from racing to kind of link up to these
yeah.
crags, which was really good. I suppose there was a bit of looking at maps, I think Pete came up with a really good line from Gillicombe Buttress that avoided going down the roads down Borrowdale, and actually turned out to be a lot faster and a gradual descent all the way. So there was a bit of route finding that we had to do, but most of it we knew from just fell races and fell running.
Okay. And yeah, I suppose I might take a moment to link things to a couple of things I was thinking of. One was that my podcast, I think it was episode 3, but it was Ali Rose and Mark Chambers, and they were talking to me about the Cairngorm Classic
yeah.
Rock link up. So yeah, that was the same book, Classic Rock, and
yeah.
Yeah, linking up all the ones in the Cairngorms. Which,
yeah.
Yeah, I really enjoyed chatting to them about that because,
yeah.
You know, it's that thing we talked about at the start, and it's the synthesis of, okay, it's the running, but it's also climbing and the challenge of that. And the logistics of that as well.
Yeah, like the logistics was quite interesting because we wanted to do it as ethically unsupported as possible, so we carried all our food. We're not the best climbers by all means, so we could have soloed all the routes, but we were quite concerned that what if we got to Pillar and we had cramp from the running and got stuck
okay.
on a route, so we wanted to keep it as safe, as light and fast as possible. So we ended up carrying, I think it was a 30-metre, quite a lightweight 30-metre rope.
Okay.
I think about 6 wires, 3 cams, a load of slings, and that was it really, and we moved together on a lot of the routes.
Okay.
But I think that's all sort of part of it, is carrying all your gear, because running 35 miles, carrying a rope and your gear does get quite tiring,
yeah.
which can make a considerable amount, because I think kind of the way we thought about it was we're just going to do a route and do a small like 5-mile run and just break it down to little bits between all of them.
Okay.
It didn't work like that. Not when I bonked spectacularly running over to Pillar, it definitely didn't. It felt like a really long way. And for me, the running was the hard part, not the climbing.
How far in was that?
So running over to Pillar is probably 22, 23 miles in, I think. And it's the longest section of running, and it's not that far. It's maybe only 3 miles from Gable to Pillar, but you sort of have to run there and run back on yourself. So it's a bit demoralising. I was really tired by then, and Pete, unfortunately, was running really well, so I was just suffering behind him most of the way.
The second thing I wanted to link in was it's Pete Rigby, isn't it? Who's
Pete Rigby.
It's the same Pete from the last episode 13, when I was talking to Kelly Roberts about the cooling.
Yeah.
So he popped up there as well.
Yeah.
So same Pete that you were with.
Yeah, yeah.
On your run.
Yeah. Cool Pete. Ex skateboarder.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. He's probably more injured from skateboarding than you are.
Yeah, maybe we should have spoke to him before I went on a skateboard. Yeah.
He would have got told some me tips off him.
Either that or he would have told me just to avoid it.
Yeah. Definitely.
Oh. So your run then, when it was a few years ago now, is it? Not quite.
Yeah, a couple of years ago now. Okay. It was something I've been wanting to do for a few years, and I was struggling to find people that were keen enough to do it, really. So I sort of asked Pete, because I climbed a bit with Pete down at the climbing wall, and obviously knew him from running. And he was like, oh yeah, I've been psyched to do that as well for a couple of years. So we sort of worked out that we both wanted to do it, and we thought, oh, we'll do it around June time and wait for a good weather window. But we never really coincided, because Pete's a teacher and I work as a paramedic.
Okay.
We never really coincided with when we were both off work and having a weather window. So we thought we'd scrapped it off for the year, and we were waiting for the next year, and we got this really good weather window, really late September, October, it must have been 2019 or 2018. And we just thought we're going to have to go for it all and do it as sort of a last minute kind of thing. And bivvied at Dow Crag and went for it that morning. It was probably the best weather you could have for it, because it was so dry and it wasn't too hot. It was a spectacular day out. Just climbing on Gimmer Crag with the sun rising was probably an unforgettable experience, really.
Cool. Yeah, what time did you start?
It was quite early. I think it was fairly... can't remember if it was 3:30 or 4 okay. in the morning. We wanted to get mostly done in the daylight, really. We did the first route, Murray's route, on Dow Crag in the dark, a route that we know quite well, so it wasn't too bad, but we wanted to get most of it done in the daylight.
In the day, yeah, sure.
We only just managed to miss doing that. I think it was dark on Little Chamonix and getting dark as we were going up Troutdale Pinnacle. But other than that, it was just a really nice long day out. Brilliant. It probably would have worked better if we'd done it in June and May, but we never got the weather window for it.
And going back to, when you first spoke to Pete about it, and he was like, oh yeah, I'm up for that too. Like, was it on quite a lot of people's radars, do you think, or
not,
at that point? Or
not really. I think there's quite a lot of the climbing community know about it.
Yeah.
I would say not a lot of the fellow running community, because there obviously is a lot of climbers that do both, but not a massive amount. And so I think Pete had this idea of three things that he wanted to do. I can remember the first two are doing the Bob Graham and doing the Lakes Classic Rock. I can't remember what the third one is. I can't remember what that is, but it was definitely one of his goals, and it was obviously one of my goals as well. So it worked quite nicely, but as I say, there's not actually that many people who've done it, and there's loads of people that could be able to do it really fast. I suppose since Tom Randall and Will Burkitt have done it, I think it's become more common known, and there's been a recent kind of explosion of people doing classic rock rounds. Like, there's obviously been quite the last week or so, there's been Glencoe Classic rock kind of round been done. There's the Cairngorms. Okay. There's quite a lot of people getting keen to do it, but I think the Lakes one probably is the original one. I suppose it's just because all the routes are just there, and it just makes a cracking day out.
Yeah.
Logical link up of doing them all.
And Will Burkitt and Tom Randall's sort of ding dong last year, 2020, wasn't it? Five times they held the record, between them, bringing it down.
Yeah, because I think Will and Callum did it straight out of the first lockdown. I don't know whether we were sort of still in lockdown, and they did they did it together and soloed everything, but did a really fast time and sort of laid the benchmark down. Because before that, I don't think anybody had got near the record. I think it was sat around 15 hours
okay
at that point, and they knocked off quite a good chunk. And I think, I know Tom Randall was keen before even Will and Callum did it. So I think he saw it as a really good opportunity to break their record. And I think Will wanted to keep a Lakes record as a record for a Lakes local. So I think that's how they ended up having a bit of a battle. But amazing to see how fast they were pushing themselves around it, really. I don't know how much faster it is possible to do it, really.
Yeah, I was just to maybe signpost the, because we're talking there about 2020, aren't we, which was obviously after you'd done it.
Yeah.
So I think it was first done in 1993.
Was it 93?
But I think maybe they used a car for that one, so then
potentially, yeah.
Maybe the one you mentioned was a bit after that.
Mm.
And obviously the initial aim to be under 24 hours.
Yeah, that's it, yeah.
And then what was the, then obviously there's the tactics, I suppose, of whether you go with a friend and you can have a rope and,
yeah,
you know, some, it doesn't sound like you had like a huge rack, but you had a bit of safety stuff.
Yeah, I suppose that's down to personal preference. Yeah. I think there's no real rules on it, really. I think it's just, it's not like the Bob Graham where there's a club or anything doing it, or the set rules of it's just go out and do it and have fun whilst you do it. There's obviously the choice of going solo, yeah, you're carrying less equipment, aren't you, so you'll be able to move faster, but there's obviously that risk of, well, falling off or getting cramp or anything like that. I personally wanted to do it with somebody else because it gives you a bit more cracking banter to carry on, and obviously there's a bit more of a safer aspect, but I think obviously it's down to personal preference how you'd want to do it. Obviously Will and Tom were doing it solo, which makes for a really fast round. I suppose it makes the running slightly easier when you're not carrying a rack.
I
think I definitely struggled carrying the gear, albeit it wasn't a lot of gear. It was a lot more than I would be used to running with, especially when you add on top of that I was carrying a pizza around with me for the rest of the rounder's fuel. So
Essential fuel,
yeah. I needed it at Pillar. I ate a whole pizza at Pillar. It was great.
Bet that was good.
Oh, yeah, definitely. It wasn't the best nutrition tip, but, yeah, it felt good to get that weight off my back, off my shoulders, quite literally.
And what's the climbing like? Because some of it's pretty, I don't know, is it like up to HVS?
Kind of, I think the hardest route is probably Mosgiel Grooves, which is VS4C.
Okay.
But not sustained in any way. It's only one move. Most of the routes, if you average them out, would probably be a severe in general, all the climbing. They're quite varied, really, the routes. They're all pretty much on the same rock, type of rock, really. It's mostly on Borrowdale volcanic kind of rhyolite.
Okay.
But the climbing's really steady, but really, really good, as you'd imagine from some of the best climbs in the Lake District at the grade.
Are they quite a lot of them, like a whole mix of like multi-pitch and short?
Yeah, all of the routes bar Nape's Needle, multi-pitch routes. So some of them are quite long, like Jones route is, I think it's 5 or 6 pitches of quite wandering kind of nature, which wasn't great because we hadn't done that route. We were doing that on site. So, well, I was doing it on site. I think Pete had done it years and years ago and couldn't remember which way he was going. But yeah, they were all fairly longish routes for the Lake District. Gillacombe Buttress again is quite a long route as well, which we downclimbed. But Nape's Needle is just Nape's Needle. It's quite an interesting one that to do fast with ropes, because there's literally no belay on it. You sort of have to hook the rope around the bottom of it. So we didn't both stand on it at the same time.
Okay.
I don't know. We both went up it, so we both climbed up to the shoulder, then one of us went up and climbed back down, and the other went up and climbed back down. We couldn't work out how to do it fast, so both of us were on it. And I think that onto Nape's Needle would be the only move that I wouldn't want to solo, because it's quite a bit of, it's not a hard mantle, but it's quite a big mantle, and when you're not very flexible, it feels quite insecure when you're climbing down it. So
So that is that the only move on the whole, on all the 15 climbs that you wouldn't be?
Yeah, I think so. Okay. It just felt a bit polished and secure for my liking. Like I say, I'm not the best climber, so I wouldn't feel too confident down climbing that.
So, I haven't been up to it, but obviously hugely iconic, sort of exposed.
It's not as big as you think. It's quite iconic, but it's not massive, really. It's probably only 20 metres up, really. It's not massive, but it's definitely an iconic piece of rock and quite historic, I suppose, in terms of lakes climbing.
And it sounds like, when you were planning and when you set off, like, definitely the main goal was, like, let's have a great fun day out with my mate Pete.
Yeah, definitely. We did want to do it as fast as we could possibly do it, really. We sort of, at the time, I think the record was 15 hours, and we sort of had a benchmark of trying to do it in that time.
Okay. Was that a solo record?
It was solo, it was a lot faster than anybody else had done in pairs. It was a good 4 or 5 hours faster than,
okay,
I think, everybody else that had done it as pairs, not that there was only a handful, had done it around the 22 hours time, quite close to the cutoff. So we were aiming, we thought we're quite fit, we'll be able to run around it. The running, definitely, it's whether we can climb it. And to all the way around to Scarfell, so about halfway, we're probably running around a 14-hour pace.
Okay.
But I blew up spectacularly. I really bunked, and it really slowed our pace down. I think climbing Jones route and not really knowing where we were going definitely slowed us down quite a lot with the route finding, and we had quite a lot of faff on that, which slowed us down a bit. Then on top of that, me being so tired and not running as fast as Pete could didn't really help. But at the end of the day, we just wanted to have a good day out, and if we were going to get a fast time, it would have just been the cherry on the top, really. But we're happy just to get it done, really.
Yeah. And your bonk then, like, was that sort of, what food did you have? Was that, could that have gone differently?
Probably not the best food. I think I set off with a pizza, a few kind of gels, SIS gels, and some chocolate bars. So I think I had a bit of flapjacks set off in the morning. So I hadn't really eaten a lot at the start, and probably hadn't eaten as well as I could have. I was carrying some water with us because I wasn't sure how much water would get on the route with it being a bit dry. But it was probably down to not eating appropriately. But it's not like it's difficult to eat when you're doing a round like that, because if you're changing your shoes, you're stopping to change your shoes anyway, so you should be able to grab a bite. But I probably just got too excited and didn't eat enough, really.
Carrying it, I mean, was it that you didn't have enough, or that you were... not eating it soon enough?
I think it wasn't eating it soon enough more than carrying it, because although we'd gone quite lightweight, still had quite a hefty rucksack. I think it was a 20 litre rucksack, so it was still quite a large rucksack, and I just carried the rucksack and sort of alpine coiled the rope around my kind of torso and ran with it like that.
How did that work for comfort?
It wasn't very comfortable, to be honest. We had to swap over after pillar because it was getting quite uncomfortable, but I couldn't fit in my bag, so I didn't really have any other way of carrying it, really.
Did you just run in your harnesses?
We kept our harnesses on.
Euro style.
definitely. We just went with, like, ski mountaineering harnesses, so really lightweight harnesses. Again, if you really wanted to go really lightweight, you could use some slings if you really wanted to.
Yeah.
But, we just went in our, ran around with our harnesses on, looking like Wallys most of the day. But a lot of the fell walkers probably thought, what the hell are they up to? But I suppose if you're climbing well, you could, and it's dry enough, there's no reason you couldn't climb a lot of the routes in your running shoes. I think, I don't know what Will and Tom were doing, whether they were climbing the routes, but you'd save a lot of time just climbing in your running shoes. We stopped and changed our shoes on most of the climbs. So we carried our rock shoes around with us, which, again, you lose quite a lot of time when it adds up, taking them, swapping your shoes at the top and the bottom of each route. But I'd rather be, personally, I would have rather have been in my rock shoes.
Your rock shoes.
Because it's just what you're used to, really.
And let's come back to this point, but I wanted to go onto a tangent there when you were talking about running around looking like a Wally. And you're like, what's he going to say? Have you done the Tre Refugee race?
I have, yeah, it's great.
Because I saw a picture of you running with a helmet on.
Yeah.
On your Strava, maybe.
Oh, yeah. Or something. That was a bit of a...
Is that race?
Yeah, it is. Yeah. I wasn't supposed to do that. Well, we both weren't. We just happened to be in the Dolomites at the same time. And funnily enough, we were climbing with Pete and Kelly.
Oh, okay.
The week before in the Dolomites. And they were both, I think Kelly, they were both doing the race. I can't remember. They were definitely both doing the race.
Were you out there as well, Georgia, as well?
Yeah,
we were both out. So we were climbing with them anyway. So they went off to do this race and we went off our separate ways. And then I got a couple of messages off some of the guys that I knew were doing it. So I got a message off Ted, who's doing it. It turns out Jack Wood had sprained his ankle and they needed somebody for the kind of unofficial GB team, and I suppose I was the closest British person to the race. I got roped into doing it, and it was an amazing race.
Tell us, because this is, I don't think we talked about this before on the podcast on any episodes, but I've done it a couple of times ages ago. This is a pretty crazy race in Italy.
It's nuts. So it's a relay race in the hills above Colina, so it's sort of far eastern Dolomites, quite close to the border, and basically it's three legs. So there's an uphill leg, which is all just ascent, like single track and kind of nice runnable climb to this refuge, and then there's a swap over, and there's a second leg which sort of goes from this refuge where you start to another refugio.
Yeah,
I think there's three refuges in total. That's why it's called Tre Refugio, because you finish at one at the bottom. And the second legs, quite rough is probably the best way to explain it. You sort of set off gradual downhill and you go up quite an easy Via Ferrata with a big scree slope at the top. And then this really lovely trail through like this limestone. It's quite undulating, but really fast. But on the second leg, you've got to wear like a climbing helmet, because you're going up this Via Ferrata and there's rocks coming down everywhere. And all I can remember from that leg is setting off really well, being with like these really fast Italian runners, them getting away from me on the climb, and all of a sudden like a massive block, probably the size of a fridge, bouncing like really fast down this hillside. And I was on this scree slope above the Via Ferrata. And I was just looking at this rock going down, thinking, oh, it's going to kill somebody on the Via Ferrata. And luckily, it must have missed anybody on it, but this is quite spicy, this.
They're pretty chilled about it, aren't they? Because it is like send, I don't know how many hundred runners up this.
Well, they don't really care what helmet you're wearing, because they give you, like, if you haven't got a specific helmet, I suppose I had my climbing helmet, but I wasn't that keen on getting really hot and sweaty in the climbing helmet. So they give you, like, a really cheap bicycle helmet that's probably like, I don't know, it looked like it was 20 years old with like a number on it, and it's not going to protect you at any of you if one of those huge rocks, because it's a big scree slope at the top of the I don't know if you remember from when you've done it above the Via Ferrata, like you're scrabbling up this scree slope above the Via Ferrata and just dislodging everything on people below. But it's a nuts race, and the party afterwards is even better.
It's, I mean, they know how to do mountain races, definitely. In Italy, I think that was my first sort of exposure to like the European style, like the spectators, it's die, like all these bells and shouting all up the course, and then
it's amazing. Like they're so psyched, aren't they?
Psyched, and like the legs are only like half
they're really
legs,
short. Short. It's a short race,
flat out.
Yeah,
and then like this wee village up in the hills that's. Get the impression that this event is the big event of the year, and everyone's like partying and making you drink out of the cup.
I always ended up full of beer or something like that.
But the whole village gets right behind this race.
It's one of the best races I've
Great atmosphere.
Yeah, thanks to Jack Wood for spraining his ankle for letting me. I felt a bit sorry for him having to hobble around and watch the races. I think I raced in his vest as well, which was even worse.
Oh, really?
He had to lend me a vest. Yeah, it was a great weekend. That was really good.
And had you, coming back towards the Lakes Classic Rock, like, had you done any sort of things like the kind of climbing, running kind of link-ups before?
No, I'd done, like, links up in the lakes, sort of in preparation for this, but
okay.
Specifically, no. I'd done quite a lot of, like, links up around the Langdale Valley, linking routes up, and there's a lot of cool stuff. Because there's so much climbing around Langdale, you could just go from crag to crag, and there's quite a few classic, like, link-ups you can do starting, like, at the ODG, go to climb a route on White Gill, then go up to Pavey, and then over to Gimmer and do a route, and Bowfell, and Neckband. You can do some really good little loops.
And do people do that quite often, or is that something
I don't know if it's done that often, but I think that I know people that have done it. There's people who've done all the hard VS, freestyle hard VSs in Langdale in a day. I know that's been done, which is probably quite a big day. Yeah. There's quite a lot of classic hard VSs in Langdale. So, there's so many kind of chances of doing different link-ups.
Something about having a sort of longer, a multi-stage mission, isn't it?
Yeah.
Kind of, I guess the focus of it, and like, right, I do this one, and then I go there and do the next one, breaking it down into.
I suppose because we haven't got massive mountains like have in, I suppose, in Europe or the US, or the Himalayas, we haven't got massive big crags, so we sort of need to split it down to doing stuff on smaller crags and moving on. I think the closest thing we've got, like alpine style things, the Coolin Ridge. So it's almost like a mini alpine kind of adventure without the dangers that come with doing big alpine days, I suppose, is one way to look at it. And like, I think in total, you're climbing a massive amount of rock on the Lakes Classic Rock. It amounts to more than probably climbing El Cap, I imagine, if you add it all together, probably. So it does add to like having a massive day of climbing a massive amount of rock, which is, you can't do it any other way in the lakes anyways at all.
Because it's over 4,000 metres of total ascent, but does that include the running?
It must do, it will do. Once you're up, there isn't actually a lot of dropping up and down.
Okay.
So you start, obviously, at Dow Crag, you drop down to Three Shires and Langdale. But once you're up to Gimmer, we contoured around. I know people have, in the past, have dropped right back down. But once you're up, you stay all the way high, all the way to Gillicum, and when you drop down to Borrowdale, you don't climb back up again after that. So once you're up, it's mostly, you don't lose or gain a lot of height, just over the undulating stuff through the Central Fells.
Okay, and I think I read that it's like 70 pitches or something. So
there could be.
Yeah, that's a lot of climbing.
it's quite a lot of climbing, yeah. Yeah, it didn't feel too much because we moved together on a lot of it, so we didn't pitch a lot of it, but I imagine if you're pitching all the individual pitches, it's quite a lot of pitches, really.
Yeah, what was that, the breakdown of, did you basically move together on, did you sort of solo some of it, or what's the breakdown?
It varied on the route, so we moved together on Dow Crag, on Murray's route, and we also got a bit lost there in the dark. which was lucky, we were moving together. Gimmer, we climb on Gimmer all the time, so we soloed them routes. I can't remember if we moved together for Bracket and Slab, because it's a bit of a, it's not the nicest move across there.
Okay.
And we soloed Bowfell Buttress, because that's just a lovely solo. It's just such nice climbing on the hard bits above a big ledge, and it's really short-lived, and the rest of it is just really nice compact rock. From there on, we moved together on all the routes, and so like the Scarfell routes, we moved together because Mosskill's quite, it's a bit harder than the others.
Okay.
Jones route, we didn't really know the routes, so we wanted to sort of be sure we were going the right way. Obviously, I've mentioned Notes Needle, don't we? We roped up flat. We down solo down climbed Needle Ridge. I've done that coming down more than I've done it coming up, so it's, I'm more used to coming down that.
Is that a bit like getting down from the needle, or is that?
Yeah, so that's after Tophet's Wall. So you sort of go up Tophet's Wall, then the most logical way is just to down climb Needle Ridge, because that's one of the routes.
Okay.
I suppose you could go down Hell's Gate Scree, then climb up, but it just seemed more logical to do it that way, I suppose. It depends how ethical you are with it. You want to climb up.
Yeah, how many of them are done? How many did you do as descents?
Three, I think.
Okay.
Just Needles Ridge, the V-Diff, which name escapes me, on Pillar, and Gillicoombe Buttress.
Okay.
Because Gillicoombe Buttress, it would be it's quite a lot to run down, to come back up, to run back down, so it just made sense to down climb that. And I don't know, I think we were quite knackered by then, so we ended up solo down climbing that, which I think was the highlight for Pete. I think he just got in the zone there and just sort of zoned out going down there and just enjoyed the fact that we just climbed down this really big classic Lake District route with the sun setting. Okay, yeah, it was quite idyllic, really. It was nice.
Because I think just thinking back to something I've done, like the Ben Nevis like Five Ridges link up, like, yeah, it tends to be like go up one,
down
and come
another.
Down another, just because kind of it makes it quicker, doesn't it?
Yeah, definitely.
And you're still climbing it.
Yeah. And once you're used to climbing down stuff, it's actually no slower than climbing up it. I found like you can actually down climb stuff once you get used to it quite quickly, quite safely, really.
Yeah.
Especially on that kind of terrain, because you've always got good handles and good footholds normally, so it does feel quite secure.
That makes me think of another question. Like, are all those routes like quite well travelled because they're classic rock?
Definitely, yeah. Very well. Except for the ones on Pillar, just because Pillar's a bit harder to get to.
Okay.
So Pillar is sort of out there on its own, on like kind of top end of Ennerdale, so you can't drive up Ennerdale, so it doesn't get as much people climbing on it. You have to either walk over from Wadsdale or Honister, so it's a bit more harder to get to than a lot of the Lake District crags. In terms of Scottish crags, it's probably no difference getting to a Scottish crag, but yeah, they're not as travelled on there, and it's probably the best rock in the Lake District on Pillar. Ribbon Slabs, just amazing rock. It's so good. It's probably the best route on the whole round is Ribbon Slab. It's amazing just because of the rock. It's fantastic.
And is that because it's a bit less travelled? Has that been a factor? Or just
it probably is a big factor, yeah, because it's not got much polish on it at all.
Okay.
It's just lovely, rough kind of rhyolite. And it's not polished in any way at all. It's just brilliant.
There must be like a bell curve here with, I'm just thinking of like some things I've gone and like just scrambled or soloed, like easy things that basically are like really obscure and like hardly ever get done. And there's like sometimes there's like loose rock and it's harder to trust it.
Yeah.
Whereas then if you get something like, well, you've been on Tower Ridge today, it's obviously really well travelled. So like you can kind of tell, I mean, there's always the possibility of loose rock, but basically it's well travelled and most of the loose rock's away. So you feel quite solid on most of that. But I guess then if it gets too travelled, then it's
a bit more polished.
A bit too polished.
Yeah. Like, I suppose that's the reassuring thing if you were soloing the routes, you know, that's the biggest factor, isn't it, pulling off at loose rock when you're soloing.
So there's not too much of that.
There's not too much loose rock. The only one that I would say is a bit loose and a bit snappy is Tophet Wall on its lowest, like the first couple of pitches on that. It's, I don't know why, but it's quite snappy kind of rock. It's sort of the way it's sedimented, it's a bit more finer, I would say, and a bit more snappy, which you probably wouldn't want to pull one of those holes off, really, but the top of it is really nice. But most of the routes are really well-travelled and clean and a bit polished, but it's to expect on Lake District climbs that have got so many stars and classics, really.
And sounds like you're obviously really pretty used to being in that environment and like those routes. Like, how many of them had you already done? Like,
I'd done most of them. I think the only one I hadn't done was Jones route on Scarfell. So before even the idea of doing them, I'd done most of them. It was quite nice to go out and recce some of the ones that we hadn't done. So we sort of worked out between us which ones we hadn't done, so at least one of us knew the way on all of them, which it does help. I know a friend did it the year before us, and he on-sighted most of the routes. He'd never done them, and it sounded like a really hard day out, just the route finding, because they had to run with a guidebook, and they didn't really know all the routes, and they had a really long day out. They still did it in under 24 hours, which is really impressive to do all the routes on site and run between them. So I suppose, again, it's subjective to how you would like to do it. I suppose it would be a real adventure to do them on site, but a lot harder work, I imagine, the route finding. Yeah. Some of them is definitely, like Jones route, is quite complex route finding. But it's good to know the routes beforehand. Like we did, makes it a lot nicer.
Yeah, and like you're saying, it's just building on your experience, so you know the running routes between them.
Yeah, that's it.
You know the climbs as well.
And
I guess, you know, when Tom and Will were sort of batting the record back and forth, like, they must have doing it so much.
They know all the kind of moves. I suppose when they're climbing at the level they're climbing, I don't know how much of the classic rock routes they've probably done between them. I'm imagining Will's probably done a lot of them. Yeah. I don't know how many of them Tom would have done, but they must have got to know it fairly well. But there's the whole other level of, like, you can take it up another notch really. There's, like, hard rock is doable, I think.
Oh, really?
So doing all the lakes hard rock and...
So that's a different book in the series, Ken Wilson, Hard Rock.
Yeah, so there's classic rock, hard rock, then extreme rock. Extreme rock, that would be a really big day out. But hard rock, there's a couple of lads, Joe Flanagan and Chris Moore, did all the hard rock routes in the Lake District in one go. I think it took them, they had a massive day and a half out. I think it took them 36 hours. But it's doable, so it's definitely...
Any idea how many routes are sort of...
I think there's 11 in that one.
Oh, wow.
I think there's 11 and it's further to run.
Is that sort of up to E1, E2?
E3. I think Extol's E3 now. Yeah. You'd obviously have to carry a bit more gear. Well, it depends how well you're climbing, a bit more gear. And it's definitely something I would like to do. In the future.
Got your eye on it.
I know... I'm sort of expecting Tom Randall or Will Burkett to do it at some point. I know there's quite a few people that would be very capable of doing it. It's just whether it's doable in 24 hours is the question, because you'd need to be able to do the running to do it in 24 hours. I think it's 40-something miles, so it's slightly further. And it isn't actually the Ken Wilson book now that you do, because a couple of the routes have fallen down. So like Deerbill Buttress isn't there anymore, so they've had to change a couple of routes, so it's a bit further running, but it's definitely doable. It's just another undertaking.
Yeah,
really a lot bit harder and a bit more serious, I think.
Yeah, like you said, the balance of what you're going to carry.
I think, like,
difficult.
I was talking to a friend last year who's quite, we were quite psyched to do it, but it never really materialized. Again, probably didn't have the weather window, and I probably wasn't climbing strong enough really to do it. But I would probably want to carry a bit more gear to do it, really. You'd probably get away with doing it with a single rope again, but some of them are quite good routes. Like Central Pillar would be quite exciting moving together on S Butchers, I would imagine. So it would be quite a good adventure, but a bit more harder.
What coming back to your classic rock, like, how did the amount of gear you had and the kind of kit you had,
I think it worked really well, the gear that we had. We probably used everything that we had. There wasn't a piece of gear that we didn't use.
Tell us again what it was. It didn't sound like much.
So we carried a set of wires. I think it was like one to six wires, maybe a few of the larger ones. It wasn't a lot of wires, and we just carried, I think it was a purple green, a red and a gold dragon cam then a load of kind of extendable 60 centimeter drawers. I think we had six of them.
Okay.
And a few slings, and we just used screw gates with an Italian hitch to belay off.
Okay.
And so we went quite lightweight, and obviously our climbing shoes. I think we came up with the idea of lightweight chalk bags, and I think Pete bought a children's chalk bag. I can't remember if it had like cartoons on it or not, but he was calling it the Alpine chalk bag. I could hardly get his hands in it, it was just his fingers. But yeah, we carried chalk and stuff. But yeah, I think that worked quite nicely. Because on these routes, there's just gear everywhere. It's not, I suppose, like some of the routes that I've done this week, some of the classic rock routes in Scotland, Advariki kind of wall, there's not as much gear in that compared to the ones in the lakes where there's just gear wherever you want it, really. Okay. So you can sort of pick and choose, and if you're moving together, it works quite nicely with what we had.
And the team aspect of like being two of you, how did that?
It worked really well because Pete's a stronger climber than me. Maybe normally slightly faster running, maybe in a race, but not much in it. He can go quite well over long stuff. But it worked really well. We'd done quite a lot together leading up to it. We'd been climbing in the lakes, doing some small link-ups. We'd done a bit of climbing in the Dolomites and stuff together. So we were quite well matched in knowing what our capabilities were. And running-wise, we'd been racing and stuff and training and stuff together. It's just a shame I blew up so much because Pete could have done it so much faster because he was running. He was having one of his really good days and I was having a really bad day. So,
and that was about three quarters of the way in?
Yeah, just after halfway probably that the wheels started coming off me. I felt so sorry for Pete because he was just running ahead all the way down Borrowdale waiting for me.
And were you able to kind of recover from that, or was it really tough?
I didn't really recover from it. So Pete sort of had a bit of a blow up going over towards Scarfell. He said, "Oh, I'm feeling a bit grim," and fell over a couple of times. But he sort of perked up, probably as I was going the other way, and it probably gave him a bit of a psychological boost seeing me struggling so much. So, but yeah, we're quite well matched. Running and climbing, so it worked really well. So I think that's what you need, really, because I'd imagine if one of you's really strong, either end of the spectrum, so you've got a really good climber and a really good climber who's not a very good runner, but a really good runner who's not a very good climber, it wouldn't really work, would it? So you sort of need to be equally matched, I suppose, and do a lot of climbing together, I suppose, beforehand to know what, because you need a good climbing partner to do it, really. You need it to be somebody that you've climbed with quite a bit and they know what you're safe with doing, and yeah, that's it basically.
Even just, it makes me think of like simple things, like I did a trip to the States like 10 years ago, and the guy I was with, like, just because we climbed so much together, like we sort of like obviously still did some shouts, you know, like safe and whatnot, but like, we sort of like just knew a bit more, like what we were gonna be doing, and that just made you more efficient again.
Definitely. It's all about efficiency, really. I'm definitely not the most efficient climber, so I do faff normally quite a lot. Pete's quite efficient, really. Pete's done a lot more kind of climbing in the Alps and stuff than I have, so he's a bit more efficient. But yeah, it's definitely boils down to, you knowing what your partner's doing to be bit more efficient, when to take you off an Italian hitch and when to move in together at the same time, kind of speed. So that's quite an important aspect to it, I think.
Well, I'm just thinking of like the last two or three routes, like how was that? Were you sort of chasing down time, or was it really tough?
It wasn't. We knew that we were going to finish within the 24 hours quite comfortably by then, and so we weren't really chasing a time as such. We were just trying to finish before it got too dark. It was tough running because I was quite tired. And I think going up Troutdale Pinnacle, second to last route, which is real classic Lakes District, Sevier, it's fairly long for a Lake District route. Goes up like some slabs and onto this amazing pinnacle and up. Okay. We were at the bottom of the crag and it just sort of got dark. I could hear these voices. I was adamant I was hallucinating because I was looking up the crag and there was no torches or anything. And Pete was like, I can't hear them. And we're climbing, like, up, moving together up this route, and we just, the pinnacle, sort of on the penultimate kind of pitch. And I pop up there, and Pete sort of followed me up, and there's like these two lads stuck on it in the dark. They'd got benighted with no red torches. Like, oh, you're all right, lads. And it's a bit dark up here. And like, oh, yeah, we know. So we sort of had to shine the torches down so that this lad could see to get to the top to set up a belay and stuff. But yeah, I thought I was going a bit crazy when I could hear them, because Pete was adamant that there was nobody up there. And it was a bit startling to meet some people from the pinnacle, the dark of Troutdale Pinnacle. But I wouldn't say it was hard. I would say it was, the climbing wasn't too grueling because we were so close to the finish. You know, when you get to a certain level, distance from the finish, you know,
okay,
it's not going to be too much longer, so it wasn't too bad. But running down from Honister, I found that quite difficult, chasing Pete down there, because I was really tired.
How many routes have you got left at that point?
Just two.
Just two, yeah.
Yeah, just two at that point, so not that many. And it's all gradually downhill and flat from there, so the running's not too bad at all.
Cool, and then Little Chamonix, I think you said.
Little Chamonix to finish,
the final one.
An absolute classic. Funnily enough, I haven't really done, I think I'd only done it once before. But it was really cool, just swinging around. And I can't remember if we soloed that or not, but just swinging around on these big jumps in the dark after climbing so much through the day and having a beer at the top at the end. And pizza afterwards as well, funnily enough, to celebrate. Two pizzas in one day. So.
Brilliant.
Yeah, it was good.
Clearly, you know, what's come across, it's like, it was just a great, fun day out.
Yeah.
Times aren't important, but like, were you happy with kind of how speedily it went?
Definitely, yeah, quite happily. Felt like we probably could have gone a lot faster if I hadn't had the bonk. And it'd be interesting to go back and see how faster we could do it. And I have thought about going and doing it solo when I've been fit running wise, but I've always thought, is it really worth the risk to do a really fast time around it?
Because I asked if you were chasing the time, because you were just under 19 hours, I think. Is that right?
I think we still, if you were going on times kind of thing, I think we got the fastest pairs doing it with a rope and stuff. I think Will and Callum did it a lot faster when they did it together, but obviously they soloed everything.
Okay.
It's not really a record per se for doing it in that kind of way, so it's so subjective to what you could carry. Everybody's differently. It's just up to how you want to do it. So I think initially we did want to try and chase the record and try and have a go, but it just turned out that we weren't fast enough, ended up just being a nice day.
Great day out.
Yeah, it was good.
And because at the time when you were doing it, the overall record was like 15 hours.
I think it was 15 hours, we were quite a few hours off it by the time we'd finish.
But it sounds like it's gone down Will Burfitt.
It's down to 10 hours now.
It's
phenomenal, isn't it?
But that just shows you like the
keeping
going at something and someone pushes it a bit further and then the other person goes, I can take a bit more.
There's probably even room off it. I don't know how much faster you could climb the routes than they're climbing them with it. Like, if you're climbing in that fast, it's going to get to a level where it's very dangerous. Yeah. I think to go faster, you need the running ability, because obviously it's 40 miles, it's quite a long long amount of running. So
I don't know Tom Randall, well, either of them, but I saw Tom was like experimenting quite a bit with ultra running and obviously being a professional climber, he was like interested in like what's the balance of what can I gain from running, but how does it hold me back in like some strength training? And
it was quite interesting reading some of his articles about that, and I think he sort of came to the conclusion that you can't do both at the same time.
At the same level,
you can do either one or the other, or do both at a slightly lower bar. So it's quite a niche thing to be able to do both well. I think there's not many people like it. Able to do them both very well, is there really? But yeah, it's all about having fun, I suppose, at the end of the day.
That's definitely right.
Yeah.
Yeah. What other kind of, well, you already said, I suppose, this hard rock. No one's done that hard rock link up in a day then.
Not in a day. I think it's, obviously, Chris and Joe did it in 36 hours. I think they didn't have the best weather when they did it, from what I can gather, really. I think it's doable in a day. Like, if you're moving well on the rock and running well, there's no reason why you couldn't.
But then
doing it a day.
A day, you know, it's just an arbitrary kind of thing, isn't it? Obviously, it's quite nice to fit something into 24, but something that takes you 36 hours, I'm sure that was an amazing mission as well.
I think it was a tough day out by the sounds of it. A lot of climbing in the rain, and they climb quite well, them lads. I don't know how much running they do, but climbing-wise, they're quite strong, so that definitely helps, that factor.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Have you got things planned, sort of other projects coming up this year, or
not for this year? It's kind of like a project for next year is maybe to try and do all the routes in the book, so the whole 40 odd routes. I can't remember exactly how many of them, and cycle unspotted between them, and try and do that in a reasonably fastish time, because I won't have a massive amount of time off work really to be able to do it. So I probably want to do it as fast.
The whole classic rock.
Yeah, so start on the furthest north and kind of get a few of them ticked off, do some big days, ticking them off and cycle between them unspotted.
Cool.
It'd definitely be a good adventure anyways. I imagine quite a lot of wet rock will be climbed.
Yeah.
Probably. But yeah, that adds to the adventure, doesn't it?
Makes
it a bit more satisfying, doesn't it, being able to do it self-spotted and cycling between them.
And like a great excuse to kind of, well, you don't need an excuse, but like a reason to come up to Scotland.
Another
reason, and maybe like, okay, we're going to go and check out these classic rock.
And there's so many, outside the lakes, there's so many other routes as well, and so many more routes with great character, like, obviously, like Tower Ridge and
stuff,
the crypt up on Bidian and stuff like that. There's some amazing routes, and to be able to do that in one push would be phenomenal. It'd be great. So yeah, hopefully I've got a friend it was actually his idea, so I'm quite keen to get it done, really. It would be a good little adventure.
Nice.
But yeah, in terms of link ups, there's probably that. Maybe at some point might try and have a go at Hard Rock.
Cool.
Would like to give it a go. So yeah, there's always some kind of little adventure to have, isn't there? And hopefully get stuck into some fell races once there's more going.
Once stuff opens up, yeah. Well, yeah, definitely get in touch when you're passing Fort William on this classic rock. I'll be...
it'll be great.
Be keen to... Well, I don't know, are you allowed people to come along with you?
There's no rules to it, is there? There's no rules, so...
Yeah,
it'll be great to have some company.
There's
a couple of routes, isn't there, on the bend? There's the long route and there's Tower Ridge, so yeah, it would be great to have some company for it.
Brilliant. Well, hey, thanks for giving me so much time, and
thank you.
It's still actually quite a nice day here in Fort William. It's been nice just sitting out, and
it's been lovely today, hasn't it? It wasn't like this morning. It was wet on Tower Ridge.
I think let's leave it there, and good luck for everything going forward.
Aye, cheers.
Cheers, Josh. Yeah, I'll just do a wee ending where I say, this is Go Mountain Goats podcast, and this has been episode 14, and be back with the next one. I'd like to say I won't have a broken wrist next one, but I probably still will, but it won't keep me for too long. Great, cheers.